So this chapter can be seen to be divided into three main sections. The first section, from verse 1 to 5, I believe it is, describes the living entity, how he comes into the material nature. The middle section, from 6 to 18, describes how he's affected by the modes of nature which are woven through within the material nature and how they affect him. And the last section, from 19 to 27, describes how he can get out from this trap of the material nature and the three modes. So it's quite simple, this conception. The first section, how the living entity comes into the trap. The middle section, how the trap keeps him entangled. And then the last section, how he gets out of the trap. Very simple way you can remember. And then the middle section has three subsections. And that's, I think this is listed in your, you have this notebook with the sections, right? So there's three subsections. The competition of the modes and dying in the modes and actions in the modes. Something like this. There's different subcategories of that section. But still it's describing how the modes trap the living entity. So these last two verses are very important verses in this chapter, because Krishna is answering Arjuna's third question that he asked. The first two were, what are the symptoms of a person who has transcended the modes? The second one was, what is his behavior? And the third is how he can get out, or what are the means by which he can rise above the three modes? How does he become transcendental to the modes? Which he didn't ask before in chapter 2. So there's a development of the philosophy. So Krishna goes a little deeper than in chapter 2. The difference between... Now, Krishna answered the first two questions already before we had all of our dramas in these verses from 22 to 25, right? If you go back to that, you'll see that there's a very subtle difference between the symptoms and the behavior. The symptoms are mentioned in the first verse, verse number 22. Prakasham cha, pravittam cha, moham eva cha pandava. This verse. Because these are only perceivable by the individual himself. No one else can perceive these symptoms, except for the person himself. But from verse 23 to 25, These behaviors are perceivable by everyone or anyone who has knowledge about the modes. So those behaviors are perceivable by others. So in this way, Krishna has answered the first two questions. What are the symptoms and what are the behaviors of someone who's transcendental to the modes? Someone who's a saint. Right? These are the characteristics. So now he answers the third question in verse 26. Mangchayo vyavacharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. So Prabhupada comments, this verse is a reply to Arjuna's third question, what is the means of attaining the transcendental position? As explained before, the material world is acting under the spell of the modes of nature. One should not be disturbed by the activity of the modes. Instead of putting his consciousness into such activities, he may transfer his consciousness to Krishna activities. Krishna activities are known as bhakti yoga, always acting for Krishna. So, mam chayo yavicharena. So, mam is aham in the second case, the accusative case, unto me. Or to me. Mam chayo yavicharena bhakti yogena sevate. So, bhakti yogena is in the instrumental case. By performing bhakti yoga, by serving me in bhakti yoga. What kind of bhakti yoga? It's also in the same case, avyavicharena, without fail, undeviated devotional service. The acharyas say that this means that the person has no tendency to serve anyone other than Krishna. And it can also be seen as without fail, meaning in all circumstances. The word cha is also important in this verse. And actually, before, I think it was in the 11th chapter, I actually made a mistake when I was presenting something to you. Bhaktya trananyaya shakya aham evam vidurjana. This verse. Gyatum yoshtum chitatmena. Haribol, please stop playing around in the back there. Otherwise, just leave it in class. So, in that verse, the word tu had some significance. It meant that only by devotional service. And I said that this was the only way shloka, something like this. But actually, this is the only way shloka. that one could also be considered maybe like a secondary only way shloka. But this is the main verse. This was the verse that I was thinking about when I said these comments, because I remembered that there was these comments, but it was actually about this verse. That verse also has this kind of exclusivity to it, the nature of exclusivity, that only by bhakti can one see and understand Krishna. That's also true. But here, it is more special. Although, but in both verses, Krishna says, it's unto me, bhaktya tananyaya shakya aham evam vidurjana. So he says, me, or aham. But here, he says also, mam chayo. But here, the commentators, Sridhar Swami and Baladev Vidyabhushan, they both comment on this word cha, which is usually an insignificant word, which is used to fill in gaps. And just to, you know, when you're making a list, this person, that person, and this person, or this, and that. But here, it has, sometimes the words cha have very deep significance. So, in this verse, it does. This word cha means, according to Baladev Vidyabhushan, the only way. The only way to transcend the modes is to serve Krishna. And Sridhar Swami also says the same thing. It means that the determination to perform only devotional service, that means no karma yoga, jnana yoga, or ashtanga yoga. Because all the other practices are actually given up at the time of liberation. But this bhakti yoga is different. It is avyaya, or is transcendental. It continues after the point of liberation. So this bhakti yoga is automatically brings one to a platform above the modes of nature. If one is fully engaged in devotional service, and that means the mind and senses, the intelligence, everything is fixed on Krishna, then one can rise above the modes of nature. And there's no need for anything else. Bhavadeva Vibhushan says that one must discriminate, use his power of discrimination, and then serve me. That discrimination alone will not do the job. The Gyanis, they use discrimination analysis, which is called Viveka. But that alone is not sufficient to bring one above the modes of nature. One has to also serve Krishna. Because even the Gyanis, who want to merge into Krishna, they also have to perform some devotional service, and by the mercy of Krishna, he allows them to merge into them. As Baladev Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions in the next verse in his comments. Prabhupada continues, we'll skip a few sentences in his commentary. So, if one engages himself in the service of Krishna or his plenary expansions with unfailing determination, although these modes of nature are very difficult to overcome, one can overcome them easily. This has already been explained in the 7th chapter. One who surrenders unto Krishna at once surmounts the influence of the modes of material nature. To be in Krishna consciousness or in devotional service means to acquire equality with Krishna. The Lord says that His nature is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge, and the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme, as gold particles are part of a gold mine. Thus the living entity, in his spiritual position, is as good as gold, as good as Krishna in quality. So, when one serves Krishna, he's associating with Krishna directly. So there's an exchange of opulences that happen mystically. But even in the mundane platform, if you connect with someone, if you're connected with someone somehow, you acquire the qualities of that person. So, I mean, even Hiranyakashipu understood this principle. In Hari Bhakti Sudadaya, he says that association is just like a crystal. That it, you put a crystal in front of something and then it changes color according to the color of that object. So when you come close to someone, you acquire those qualities of that person. So similarly, if someone's serving Krishna, chanting his name, then there's an exchange of opulences. Eternality, religiousness, happiness, knowledge, all of these things. So the living entity comes to the same quality. His constitutional position, he obtains his original constitutional position by serving Krishna. So it becomes one in quality with Krishna. So Prabhupada mentions that as good as gold, as good as Krishna in quality. So the person attains this Brahman platform. Krishna is on the Brahman platform. And one who serves Krishna attains that platform by this association, by this exchange of opulences. So he's like a gold ring and Krishna is like the gold mine. But they have the same quality. Right now, that quality, that golden quality, that godlike quality that we originally have is covered. Right? and we are exhibiting qualities of a material nature, envy, passion, lust, anger, so many things, illusion, pride. But those qualities are transformed and, well, really kind of evaporated as one comes in contact with Krishna. Gradually, those qualities disappear. So then we become godlike, and we develop the same nature as Krishna as we rise above the modes. Sagunan samatityaitan. So Prabhupada continues, thus the living entity in his spiritual position is as good as gold, as good as Krishna in quality. The difference of individuality continues, however, otherwise there would be no question of bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga means that the Lord is there, the devotee is there, and the activity of exchange of love between the Lord and the devotee is there. Therefore, the individuality of two persons is present in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual person. Otherwise, there would be no meaning to bhakti yoga. So here, Prabhupada slams this impersonal idea of attaining the Brahman platform and merging into Krishna's body. Although there are, of course, many people that want to do this. And this is... There is Gyani Mishra Bhakti, Bhaktas. They want to merge into Krishna. They do a little bhakti, and somehow Krishna allows them to do this. But this is not the ultimate constitutional position of the soul. Muktir hidvan yata rupam sarupena vyavastiti. One has to not only give up his false identity, but he has to become situated in his real swarup, his real original identity, in order to be considered liberated. So since the original position is not attained in Brahmajyoti, he's not actually considered liberated. But he is above the modes of nature, and he's outside of the seven, you know, layers of the universe. So he's called liberated in that sense. Sayujya Mukti he has attained. But according to the Vaishnava definition, or the Bhagavatam definition of liberation, it's not. Because he doesn't have Sarupena Vivastiti. He's not situated in his Sarup. Prabhupada continues. If one is not situated in the same transcendental position with the Lord, one cannot serve the Lord. See, actually bhakti begins at the platform of Brahman. The Brahman platform, the spiritual platform. One has to be on the spiritual platform to actually serve the Lord. He has to be above the modes of nature. This is when bhakti begins. If one is not situated in the same transcendental position with the Lord, one cannot serve the Lord. To be a personal assistant to a king, one must acquire the qualifications. Thus, the qualification is to become Brahman, or free from all material contamination. It is said in Vedic literature, Brahmaiva san brahma pyete. One can attain the supreme Brahman by becoming Brahman. This means that one must qualitatively become one with Brahman. By attainment of Brahman, one does not lose his eternal Brahman identity as an individual soul. So, because the verse has the word bhakti yoga in it, it means serving with love the object of devotion, and then there's a subject who's offering the service. This is the meaning of the word sevate. Mamchayo vyavicharena bhakti yogena sevate. Sa gunan, sa, he, that person who's sevate, mam, to Krishna, then gunan atita. So he transcends the modes of nature. But he, there's the sa, he, the person, mam, Krishna, and sevate, the action This is what Prabhupada is talking about. Because in this verse, you have these three things. The subject, the verb, and the object. As in any sentence has, any English sentence or any Hindi sentence, in any language, you have a subject, an object, and a verb. So, the verb is sevate, and the subject is sa, that person, and the object is Krishna, mom. And Krishna is speaking, so he says, mom, to me. That person who serves me with devotion, what kind of devotion? Avyabhicharena bhakti. Avyabhicharena bhakti yogena. It's in the same case. So it's qualifying the word bhakti yoga. So it means he serves only Krishna. Without any break, without failing. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.3, Prabhupada quotes Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, who gives the example about a man who has strong digestive power. Right? Such a person does not have to take medicine or any kind of churna, right, in order to help his digestion. Only when a man is old or he's sick. Please don't talk in the back. Don't talk in the front. Don't talk on the side. A man who has strong digestive power, he doesn't need to take churna or any medicine to help his digestion. So similarly, when he eats the food, his body automatically lights a fire and begins digesting it, because he has this power. So similarly, a person who's performing devotional service, that devotion is so powerful that he doesn't need to perform any of the activity. He doesn't need to do karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga in order to light the fire of Brahman. He can attain the transcendental position, rise above the modes of nature. And he does not need to act separately to attain the perfection of knowledge and renunciation. Knowledge and renunciation are achieved just by the power of the bhakti. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayata Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha. So Ashu means quickly also. He very quickly attains both of these things. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said the same thing. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Shikshartha Eka Purusha Purana. That Bhakti Yoga automatically brings knowledge and renunciation. These things come. In the Bhagavatam, it's also mentioned that just as when a person eats, he becomes nourished, he becomes satisfied, and his hunger and thirst are eradicated. So similarly, when one performs bhakti, or devotion, he gets three things. Devotion, realization of the Lord, and detachment. Bhakti pareshana bhavo varaktir anyatya chaisha chika eka kala. Simultaneously, at one time, he gets devotion, realization of God, and detachment. So bhakti yoga is very, very powerful, and nothing else is required. In verse 2 of this chapter, Baladeva Vidyabhushan said that only by worshipping the Guru one can attain this knowledge. So why does he say this? Because service mood to the spiritual master, it dissolves the glue of the false ego which binds us in this material world. When one is serving the spiritual master, then he's thinking himself as a menial servant of the spiritual master, Nicho. He's brahmachari, vasantanto garohitam, acharan dasavan nicho. He is serving the spiritual master as a menial servant. And he's thinking, I'm just serving my spiritual master. So this breaks his ego of being the enjoyer. And this is the thing which binds us to and attracts us to the modes of nature. Because the modes of nature are enticing us to enjoy in different ways. And when we have an enjoying mentality, then we become enticed and brought in by the modes of nature. They suck us right in. They draw us right in. Because we have this enjoying mentality. So by serving the spiritual master, that changes. Because, and it's very practical and real. You can feel, you know, I'm a servant of the spiritual master. I'm the servant. I'm not the enjoyer. I'm serving him. He, let him enjoy. And he is serving Krishna also. So, devotees who are fixed on the instructions of the spiritual master, they don't heed the allurements of Maya in the form of the three modes of nature. And their attitude of devotion and service, they carries them to the point of perfection in devotion. So now, after reading this verse, one may have numerous questions. Of course, most of us aren't even intelligent enough to ask the right questions, unfortunately. So the previous acharyas asked the questions. Please stop playing around in the back. What are those questions? Krishna said that the person who serves me with love and devotion, with bhakti, he attains Brahman, Brahma Bhuya Kalpate. So one obvious question is, sometimes the acharyas pose it like that there's a question being raised. Sometimes they pose it as Krishna, as Arjuna, saying, wait a minute, you're saying that your devotees who serve you with love and devotion, they're serving you, but you're telling that they attain Nirgun Brahman. How is it that your devotees who are serving you, they attain Brahman, impersonal Brahman? What is the answer? How can it be? Right? That's an obvious question, I think. And the answer is that Krishna says, Brahmano hi pratishtaham, because actually I am the shelter of that Brahman. I'm the rest. That Brahman is not different from me. And pratishtha can also mean the completeness of the Brahman. I am like the personified, concentrated form of Brahman, Krishna is saying. Just like there's sunlight everywhere in the universe, but the sun is the concentrated form of the sunlight. So similarly, Krishna is the concentrated, personified form of Brahman. Because he's the source of the Brahman. And that Brahman is resting in him. So the devotees attain Brahman because Krishna says, well, I'm the shelter of that Brahman. They attain the Brahman platform. Another question one may raise is that this Brahman platform is obtained by discrimination between matter and spirit. Okay, fine. But what is the support of the living entity who attains the Brahman position? Because, Krishna, you said that everything rests in you. And, well, what about the living entity who leaves the shelter of the three modes of nature? Is he independent? Is he no longer, he has no place to rest? He's not resting in you? Somehow he's independent of you? And Krishna says, no, brahmano hi pratishtaham. No, they are also resting in me because I am the basis of the Brahman platform. They're still resting in me. They're not independent. So, in this way, there's different, various questions that are answered. Okay, let's chant this verse.
Brahmano hi pratishtaham amritasya vyayasya cha shashvatasya cha dharmasya sukasya ekantikasya cha.
And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So Krishna says that I am this foundation or the rest or shelter, support of the Brahman, platform of Brahman. So the living entities who attain liberation from the three modes are still resting in me because Brahman is resting in me. They're not independent.
And he said, he uses the word he, meaning definitely, without a doubt, I am the foundation of the Brahman platform.
So, we'll read Prabhupada's purport. The constitution of Brahman is immortality, imperishability, eternity, and happiness. Brahman is the beginning of transcendental realization. Paramatma, the Supersoul, is the middle, the second stage in transcendental realization, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate realization of the Absolute Truth. Therefore, both Paramatma and the impersonal Brahman are within the Supreme Person. It is explained in the seventh chapter that material nature is the manifestation of the inferior energy of the Lord. The Lord impregnates the inferior material nature with fragments of the superior nature, and that is the spiritual touch in the material nature. When a living entity conditioned by this material nature begins the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, he elevates himself from the position of material existence and gradually rises up to the Brahman conception of the Supreme. This attainment of the Brahman conception of life is the first stage in self-realization. At this stage, the Brahman realized person is transcendental to the material position, but he is not actually perfect in Brahman realization. If he wants, he can continue to stay in the Brahman position and then gradually rise up to Paramatma realization and then to the realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many examples of this in Vedic literature. The four Kumaras were situated first in the impersonal Brahman conception of truth, but then they gradually rose to the platform of devotional service. One who cannot elevate himself beyond the impersonal conception of Brahman runs the risk of falling down. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that although a person may rise to the stage of impersonal Brahman without going further, with no information of the Supreme Person, his intelligence is not perfectly clear. Therefore, in spite of being raised to the Brahman platform, there is the chance of falling down if one is not engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. In the Vedic language, it is also said, raso vayasaha rasam yivayam labhanandi bhavati. When one understands the personality of Godhead, the reservoir of pleasure, Krishna, he actually becomes transcendentally blissful. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7.1. The Supreme Lord is full in six opulences, and when a devotee approaches him, there is an exchange of these six opulences. The servant of the king enjoys an almost equal level with the king. And so eternal happiness, imperishable happiness, and eternal life accompany devotional service. Therefore, realization of Brahman, or eternity, or imperishability, is included in devotional service. This is already possessed by a person who is engaged in devotional service.
Now, Prabhupada discusses the desire of the living entity and some of the psychological features of the living entity
being in the material world and then being affected by the modes and then becoming free but from the modes. The living entity, although Brahman by nature, has a desire to lord it over the material world, and due to this he falls down. In his constitutional position, a living entity is above the three modes of material nature, but association with material nature entangles him in the different modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Due to the association of these three modes, his desire to dominate the material world is there. By engagement in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, he is immediately situated in the transcendental position, and his unlawful desire to control material nature is removed. Therefore, the process of devotional service, beginning with hearing, chanting, and remembering the prescribed nine methods for realizing devotional service, should be practiced in the association of devotees. Gradually, by such association, by the influence of the spiritual master, one's material desire to dominate is removed, and one becomes firmly situated in the Lord's transcendental loving service. This method is prescribed from the 22nd to the last verse of this chapter. Devotional service to the Lord is very simple. One should always engage in the service of the Lord, should eat the remnants of foodstuffs offered to the deity, smell the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, see the places where the Lord had his transcendental pastimes, read of the different activities of the Lord, his reciprocation of love with his devotees, chant always the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and observe the fasting days commemorating the appearances and disappearances of the Lord and his devotees. By following such a process, one becomes completely detached from all material activities. One who can thus situate himself in the Brahma Jyoti, or the different varieties of the Brahman conception, is equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in quality. I'm going to read something, some of the commentary, verse, give you a different, on some kind of different angle of understanding all of this. Some of you have some questions right now in your mind? Yeah? Okay, just wait a minute, just hold them. Let me just read this. Okay, here's from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Arjuna says, how will your devotees get Nirgun Brahman? They're rendering service, so why they will get Nirgun Brahman? Krishna says, that Brahman which is considered Param Pratishta, the supreme shelter by the impersonalists, I am the shelter of that Brahman. It is non-different from me. It is one of the dependent features of myself. I am also the realizer of amrita or nectar. If you notice the word amritasya, yavyasya there. So the word amrita means nectar. So Krishna says, I am also the realizer of nectar. And the question is this amrita? Is this nectar from Swarga? Is it heavenly nectar? Krishna says, no, it is avyaya, immortal. It is liberation and the attainment of myself. I am also the support of eternal religion. The word dharmasya is here in the shloka too. Of religion. So Krishna says, I am also the support of eternal religion in both the practice and perfected stages. What is that eternal religion? That is bhakti. All other religious principles and practices are rejected at the time of liberation, karma, jnana, and ashtanga. But bhakti is the eternal religious duty at both sadhana and siddha stages. This is also supported by me. The eternal happiness, which is the fruit of prema bhakti, is also supported by me. Therefore, everything is under my control. However, those who worship me with a desire to merge into me will also attain that Brahman by my mercy. So, Shridhar Swami also comments that Brahmano Pratishta means the personified, solidified form of Brahman. So Krishna is Brahman, but he's the personified, concentrated form of Brahman, just like the sun is the concentrated form of sunlight. right? So that's explained. Just like the light is all over the universe, but the sun is an intense form of the light. As the sun is the source of the light, I am the source of the Brahman effulgence. Just as in the sun there is light, and there is light outside, there's no difference between the two lights. We will still say, this is the light of the sun. Similarly, although Brahman and Krishna are non-different, still Krishna says that he is the support of Brahman, although they are non-different. Okay, the last Baladeva Vibhushan comments on the word pratishta also. In which one is situated? I am the supreme shelter and the supreme object of love for my devotees. In this way, by devotion, the devotee experiences me. There is no coming down on the material platform because I am the supreme shelter of all living entities. How does a person take shelter of me when he's liberated? Is he independent? No. I am also the support of the liberated Brahman position. I am the support of the six kinds of opulences and the principles of religion, as well as the transcendental pleasure. Rasovaisa, rasam yevayam, labbanandibhavati. And the principles of religion, as well as the transcendental pleasure and the vibhuti of my lila. And all these come from me. So, Baladeva Vibhushan summarizes. He says, association with the modes of material nature means being in the material world. But being freed from the modes of nature means being liberated. So, being freed from the modes is done by devotional service. This is the sum and substance of chapter 14. This is the meaning of this chapter. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur summarizes. He says, the three modes of nature are obstacles, and the perfection of life is to become free from these three modes. This can be done by pure devotional service, through performing devotional service to Lord Krishna. So, maybe some of your questions were answered just by hearing some of these things. But you can ask. You had something? The way that one could translate this verse, one is that I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. I am the basis of immortality. I am the basis of imperishability. I am the basis of ultimate happiness. So, this is like one of the Vaishnava ways of looking at the verse. And even if one accepts that Brahman is all of those things, right? Eternal and the ultimate position, the constitutional position of ultimate happiness, all of this, that Brahman is a platform. It's the beginning of the spiritual platform, which Prabhupada said in the commentary. So, since it's the beginning of the spiritual platform, and since that Brahman is non-different from Krishna, it can be considered all of these things. One is meant to continue on the ladder, or, you know, the stairway to spiritual life. Since it's the first step, why would someone stop at the first step? He would go to Paramatma, and then he would go to Bhagavan. Yeah? So, and Prabhupada explains, that's why Prabhupada explains this succinctly and explicitly in his commentary. He says, the constitution of Brahman is immortality, right? All of these things. But Brahman is the beginning of transcendental realization. And then later he says, if he does not continue, and if he wants to just stay there, what is he saying? What is it? If he wants, he can continue to stay in the Brahman position and gradually rise to Paramatma, etc. One who cannot elevate himself beyond the impersonal conception runs the risk of falling down. So, the Brahman platform is also just, it's a platform of equality, qualitative equality with Krishna. And on that platform, the soul can serve Krishna in love, in bhakti yoga. And that is the real meaning of the Brahman platform. If one just comes to the Brahman realization in that Brahman platform, then he has a stunted or imperfect or incomplete realization of Brahman. Because Brahman ultimately means all of the features of Brahman. And then he has only the sat feature, and therefore it is not a complete, it's not complete Brahman realization. But because it's above the modes of nature, it has a qualitative equality with Krishna. And therefore it's considered to be the constitution, therefore the constitution of Brahman is considered immortal, imperishable, eternal, and happy. Constitution of Brahman is all of these things. But Brahman is just the first step of complete Brahman realization. Even though it's only the first step, still it's all of these things. Right? We know that Brahmananda is much higher bliss and happiness than any kind of material happiness in the material world, which is Brihaspati Ananda. And if you go up, there's all kinds of levels of bliss that one can get from Manushya Ananda, human pleasures of passion, Devananda, Karma Devananda, Indra Devananda, Brihaspati Ananda, and then much higher. So that's the highest in the material realm, and then the highest is Brahma Ananda. That's like, like leaps and bounds beyond any material kind of happiness. But even that is just compared to a drop of water in the ocean of Bhagavan realization. But it's qualitatively, there's a qualitative equality because it's a drop. But it's not the ocean. You can't swim in a drop, although it's made of the same substance. But you can swim in the ocean of devotion. So it's a philosophical equality, or not philosophical, but constitutional equality, but then it's still not complete. So you have to understand both of these things. Crippled state. And his spiritual master is kind of walking him along. So he's not walking. But in a way, he's kind of limping along. You might say he's walking, but he's not really walking, because really walking means you can walk alone, and you can, you know, you're not limping like this. So we are being kind of aided in that way. Then our bhakti is, although the spiritual master is performing pure devotion, and so he accepts our kind of crippled attempt. And so it can be considered bhakti, because we're taking shelter. But because we have desires and we have modes and etc., it's all kinds of misra bhakti. It's not sarup siddha bhakti, it's sarasing siddha bhakti. And Aropya Siddha Bhakti. There's different terms for different kinds of crippled devotion. Or maybe that's not such a good term. Kind of subsidiary
or mixed devotion. Right. We accept this mixed devotion.
So, yeah, the Brahman platform, actually it's mentioned that Nishtha is the beginning stage of prema.
We get this. There's one shloka in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Nishtha hoite premara taranga. Something in this.
So, in Nishtha, one is entering the threshold of liberation. He's at the threshold of liberation. He is becoming detached from the modes of nature and from the enjoying mood. He's controlling his mind and senses. He's free from distraction. And the thirst for material things is now gone. There's still some residue of anarthas there, but they don't act as obstacles on his path. So this is the beginning of the Brahman platform. It's not like you wake up one day and, you know, you're on the Brahman platform, and it's a gradual attainment. But at the stage of bhava bhakti, one becomes completely free from the influence of the modes of nature. So in a liberal definition, one says nishtha, and in a strict definition, the stage called bhava, which is the uttamadhikari stage. This is where real bhakti begins. So there's different ways to define, according to the liberal and extremely strict definitions. But at least the person should be at nishtha. Then it could be said that he's performing bhakti. Before that, there's so many other desires and modes, and it's not real pure bhakti. There's even a more liberal definition, but and I think you've already discussed this in Nectar Devotion. It's not so easy to understand, because you can see it from all different angles, and that's why it's a little confusing to explain this point. Let's go to another question. Someone else? Oh, right. Well, the definition of Krishna in Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam, I think you studied this already, right? So Krishna, that definition meant Krishna, all of his expansions and avatars, and his pure devotees, right? So, since this is an important verse, it's giving a definition for one to come to the Brahman platform. Therefore, Prabhupada wants to give a full definition. So he includes this, you know, that Krishna, or when Krishna says Mam, he's also referring to his form as Ram, or as Narayan, or Dwarkanath, like that, not just only Krishna. And Rupa Goswami does the same thing in this Paribhasha Sutra of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anya Vilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Jnavitam Anu Kuryena Krishna Nu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. So this Krishna, the word Krishna means not only Krishna, but Ram, the Shringa, Varaha, Narayan, Dwarkana, all of these. So by serving Ram, you can also attain the Brahman platform, or Narayan. There may be other reasons why Prabhupada kind of stuck that thing in there, but this is my understanding. And Bhakti Ananda, or Seva Ananda, Prema Ananda, Prema Ananda. Yeah, it's definitely, there's different meanings. But there's pleasure even in the material world.
Huh? But it's some kind of pleasure, but it's not enough to keep the living entities eternally situated there. Talking about Brahman platform in which you can realize Krishna, serve Krishna. So that Brahman platform is the platform upon which you can actually serve Krishna and realize Him. So then that Brahman platform, of which Krishna is the foundation, is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness, whereby you can connect with Krishna and serve Him. Because Krishna is saying, Brahmanohi pratishtaham. I'm the ultimate shelter of that Brahman. That Brahman, which the impersonalists accept as the param pratishta, the supreme shelter of all. I am the shelter of that. That means I am higher than that. So you may come to that level, that's just the beginning. But come to realize me. Ultimate means in comparison to anything in the material world. It's ultimate. From Krishna's viewpoint, it's... See, Brahman platform doesn't just mean merging into Brahman. It can mean that also, but it can mean other things too. It can mean pure devotion. It can mean a yogi who's meditating and attains liberation by meditation on the super soul. They're also in Brahman. Are they not? When someone has prema bhakti, are they on the Brahman platform? Yeah, they are. That's the point you don't understand. When someone has prema, he automatically has Brahman. He must have Brahman if he has prema. So Brahman is the platform by which we can attain prema. It's the platform of equality and serving the king. We get the opulences of the king. We come to this Brahman platform by serving Krishna. And Krishna is the shelter of that platform and the ultimate object and goal of that coming to that platform. And Krishna will describe in more detail this philosophical point in the next chapter to further clarify for people who have still doubts about this point. Yeah? More beautiful than when they before they became the Lord. They're richer because they have the wealth of love for Krishna. The beginning of love for Krishna. They have some affection for Krishna. So that's their wealth. And they are more beautiful too. Their faces are more clear. Their eyes are more clear. They smile more. They're more peaceful. You ever see karmis walking on the street? They're always like this. They have this look on their face like, it's so horrible. Plus the fact that their skin is gray or kind of discolored in various ways. So those opulences do come. Although Krishna gives those opulences only when they don't act as obstacles on the path to Him. If He sees that His devotee is going to become completely bedazzled and befuddled by having a little wealth, then He doesn't give it. But when He sees they're fixed, then He gives them. If He knows they'll use it right, the Prabhupada. So depending on our adhikar, then we get all of these opulences. People become attracted to devotees. They're very attractive, beautiful, renowned, full of knowledge. They become famous. But if they can't handle all of these things, and that will make them fall down, then Krishna withholds it, generally. Okay. Last question. They have knowledge. They have a little passion because they're not pure, but they're primarily in goodness. A lot of them don't get very big salaries, philosophers and scientists, you know. So they're working and they're kind of educationalists, intellectuals, so they're generally, you know, free from more passionate and ignorant activities, and they definitely have a sense of superiority over others and a sense of happiness. So yeah, they are primarily in goodness. The fact that a lot of them are atheists is, you know, an unfortunate fact, but nevertheless, they're, you know, a lot of them are in goodness. But their knowledge is stolen by illusion. They still have some envy, and so they don't use their knowledge properly. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.